think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr, my co-host, Rob Rojas,
my trusty co-host, Ben the Machine. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 212 of Low Limit Football on this 23rd of July, 2018. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we are back after a week off to recover from one of the most exciting World Cups we've seen in a while. We're going to recap that tournament tonight and move forward. We're going to jump right into the silly season known as the transfer window, discussing the biggest moves so far, and when is a deal not a deal? We're going to discuss the breaking news tonight with our very special guest, Claudio Perforetto from Gianluca Di Marzio, who will be joining us in just a few minutes. Mr. Roberto Rojas, get in here, my man. How are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. I mean, it's been a really amazing, you know, just incredible last week, I would say. Don't you say? It's been amazing. I mean, you know, there's been things happening in the world. You know, we kind of know a new song from various French players. Obviously, there was some controversy given to other players about, you know, just race. And then looking at everything that's happening here in the transfer window, I mean, my God, we have a lot to handle. I don't even think we're going to take an hour and a half to do such a thing.
Man, we're going to have to try and just piece it into one simple, small, slight show because, you know, and obviously we're lucky tonight because we have Claudio Perforetto with us from Gianluca Di Marzio, and he's one of the guys that broke some of the big news tonight. So we're going to try to wrap it up, but, you know, obviously we've got a lot of stuff to cover, so let's jump into it right away, man. Let's hit our trivia question first, and it is your honor. I know we've had trivia's been off for a couple of weeks now, but tonight's going to see its magic and majestic returns. So it is your honor, Your Honor.
Yes, sir. So obviously we'll be talking about the World Cup, but it's kind of a bit of my trivia question here. So Didier Deschamps, as we know, is the winning French manager, did so in 2018 and did so in 1998 as a captain. Can you name the last player to win a World Cup as a manager and as a player?
Oh, I saw this one too. There's actually three people that have done it. Deschamps is the third.
Right, but there are two who have done it as captain and as a coach. That's why I'm giving you one off. So I'm giving you one player.
So I think it is the Brazilian.
I'm already telling you it's wrong.
Then it's the other one. Oh, hold on. Now I got to think as a player and as a coach.
That and the Brazilian you're talking about is Zagallo. He won
Thank
it
you.
As a player in 58, 62, manager in 70, assistant manager in 1994. Okay. So, but that's not the name I'm going for. There is someone else.
Oh, that's going to kill me now. And I have to, all right, let me think about it. I know I saw the answer to this trivia question. It's going to drive me crazy, but hopefully I'll be able to remember before the night is out. So let's get to opening thoughts. And the opening thoughts are our final thoughts on the 2018 World Cup, Rob. We rewind back, Rob, you and I, to late December, where we looked at the groups fresh off the draw. And you and I have enjoyed an absolute wonderful roller coaster of coverage of the 2018 World Cup, previewing each team, previewing players, you know, having a couple of great shows with Zito and with Amadi, also not knowing that we would have the two guests that would represent the final, and Eric Devine and Ante Zoric, who we just replayed the show on our live broadcast. So it's been a heck of a ride, and one of the more exciting World Cups for me. I know there have been some ups and downs. Let's get your opening thoughts on this first in this great World Cup.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, it was certainly an enjoyable World Cup. I mean, 169 goals within 64 games, 2.64 per match. You know, obviously we did see this is a different World Cup than we've been accustomed to, at least for me. You know, I've only been able to watch 4 World Cups in my lifetime. Joe, you've definitely watched a lot more. Mm. But at least from what I've been able to see, I mean, this certainly has to go down as one of the greatest World Cups in my lifetime. Of course, 2010 will always be my favorite for obviously personal reasons. Obviously, 2006 will be yours. But I think as a neutral, I think this really has to go down as one of the best World Cups I've ever seen. I mean, we had everything. I mean, we had great goals, we had shocks, you know, we've had teams that are coming from after a long, long time, last minute goals, you know, stars breaking out, VAR, obviously the big one, penalties, a surprising finalist, and rightly so, I think, in the end, a deserved champion. I think France, you know, we talked about that for the last few months, ever since the draw that was announced, that France were going to be one of the favorites to win the World Cup. Not exactly the top favorite, because we did pick Brazil to win the World Cup, but unfortunately it didn't go that way. But, you know, the thing that we talked about with France is that how they're able to really field such a great team, and, you know, kind of contrast with Germany, obviously, with them having a terrible World Cup that it was. You know, that their depth is incredible. You know, we saw the – and actually, we'll start from the back as well. I mean, we definitely saw Hugo Lloris, who, you know, obviously didn't win best goalkeeper of the tournament and ended up going to Thibaut Courtois, mm-hmm. But still had a great, great World Cup. We saw the great defense of players like Umtiti, Varane, Lucas Hernandez, Benjamin Pavard, who, you know, many people that was unknown because he played in Stuttgart and became a sensational player at the World Cup. You know, you look at the midfield with players like Pogba having a sensational tournament. Kante, my goodness, I mean, what a tournament he's had. I definitely thought he was maybe the second or third best player in this entire World Cup. You know, and my goodness, we can't talk about the attack, can't we? But Griezmann, you know, Giroud obviously didn't have a good World Cup, but still, you know, Dembele and you know, the main star, I think the young kid on the block, the 19-year-old Kylian Mbappe, really becoming a superstar, even though if he isn't already, he's really flourished into what could be a sensational superstar, and at just 19, who knows what can happen. But in the end, we did see, you know, the great team of Croatia, a great team with wonderful players in that midfield. Obviously, we have to talk about the golden ball winner, Luka Modric. You know, we can definitely talk about Perisic, Ivan Rakitic, Mandzukic up front. You know, certainly Subasic in goal, had a great World Cup. And then you look at other teams that, you know, unfortunately didn't make the final, but, you know, we look at Belgium and their golden generation and players like Hazard, De Bruyne, and Lukaku. We saw England with their young generation and Harry Kane winning the golden boot with 6 goals. You know, we saw the host become such a sensational, you know, and people thought that they would not go far in this World Cup, but ended up going into the quarterfinals and really making their public proud, because I think in the end they wanted to, you know, with politics aside, they really wanted to stage not only just the great World Cup on the pitch, but also off the pitch as well, and they definitely did that. And, you know, for me, it's going to go down as one of the great World Cups of all time. I think for me, obviously you're subjected to this, as I said, you know, watching much more World Cups, but certainly I think we have the deserved champion. I think we definitely see much more players really flourish. I think the one thing that I have in mind is, you know, obviously being a bit more Eurocentric, all 4 semifinalists were from Europe. But still, I mean, we definitely saw wonderful players, wonderful goals, and hopefully, assuming that they're going to keep this format in 4 years' time in Qatar, that, you know, whatever happens in 2022 has a big shoes to fill heading into the World Cup in Qatar.
Yeah, I can't echo your sentiments enough. Like you said, much of excitement, more goals in this final alone than we saw in the last 5 finals combined with a 4-2 scoreline. Luka Modric, you know, much was made about Cristiano Ronaldo's move. Luka Modric kind of thrusts himself into the limelight as a Galactico, right? I mean, he's going to be the guy that's going to be the the pinpoint the spotlight for Real Madrid. Real Madrid has now sold more Luka Modric jerseys than anything else since the departure of Cristiano Ronaldo. So, you know, he's really come onto the scene in terms of that. But we've all known him, you know, being great just in the shadows of many of the other great players at Real Madrid. But it was great to see him have his kind of coming out party. Same coming out party for Kylian Mbappe. Although we knew what we were getting into with the 19-year-old moving from Monaco to PSG. We've seen his moments of greatness, and he definitely shined and took full advantage of this particular tournament. But, you know, I want to talk even about going back a little bit. Guys like Yerry Mina, who was fantastic for Colombia in this tournament. We saw some great play from the Senegalese side who were, you know, we had talked about it. They're kind of hard luck to be eliminated on the FIFA Fair Play thing, which we talked about a couple shows ago. You know, there was so much good out of this cup. I mean, thankfully we didn't see all the human rights things and that sort of thing that many expected with Russia, right? But we saw a great tournament. You know, we can poo-poo a lot of the bad things that happened, but I'd much rather celebrate the good things. We saw a spirited Croatia side that really fought through, you know, three added extra time matches to get to this final. And really, Rob, we're in control of this final for a little while. And you just kind of saw them kind of lose a little steam somewhere through the second half, and France took full advantage. Also, you know, props to the French side, who for me, I know I said at the beginning of this tournament, was certainly one of the favorites to win this tournament, but was, for me, 4 years too soon. That I felt like this group of players could win it in 4 years. And we all expected the inevitable demise of Didier Deschamps, the coronation of Zinedine Zidane, and then France possibly winning it in 2022 in Qatar. And that Cinderella story was kind of ruined, to speak, by this team now, who found a way to get better and better and better as the tournament progressed. We think back to that, Rob, that first match against Australia. And this French side did not look like a team that was capable of winning this World Cup. I mean, we knew they were good, but we did not think they were good enough. And they just got better, and they got better, and they got better. And it got to the point where when they faced a Belgium side, Belgium had no answers for them. And they were, you know, spectacular in that performance. Then they had to duplicate it against a plucky Croatia side with a fantastic midfield, but a team that was gassed, and they were able to do it again. So, well-deserved champions. N'Golo Kante, like you'd said, was unbelievable this tournament. He was really, for me, when you look back on all the players on this French side, for me, I think he was the MVP of the French team, because he allowed the rest of the team to play however they wanted to play. He allowed Pogba to get loose. He allowed players like Griezmann to do their thing, and Mbappe to play a little more attacking. He allowed guys like Umtiti and Varane on the back line to shine, and left Lloris with really not a heck of a lot of work to do throughout the tournament. So for me, N'Golo Kante was the French MVP, but you also have to credit Didier Deschamps for his job of moving this team forward in this tournament and getting them to play their absolute best match when it absolutely counted, when the hardware was on the line. And the world needs to take notice of this French side. Again, I had said this team for me felt like it was a team that was going to be the 2022 team, and turns out it's going to be the 2018 team. And you've got to look at them and say, you know what? These guys are one of the top two or three favorites to win the 2022 tournament, provided that they return this crop of players, because they're all still very young. So I think it's a wonderful time in French football. I think it's also a wonderful time in Croatian football, but unfortunately, I think this was the opportunity that will pass them by. But when we look back on this Croatian side, we'll look on them with the utmost respect and knowledge that their quality on the pitch was demonstrated throughout this tournament. Rob, I want to echo your sentiments about the Russian side. Talk about a team taking full advantage of home field advantage. This Russian side did it. They did it with some wonderful attacking play out of their midfield. They did it with timely goals, and they were wonderful. And I look also back to Igor Akinfeev, who we always talk about as having that one howler tournament. Never happened. And he probably played his best tournament. Now, granted, when you look at this Russian side versus the other teams that were in this tournament, it wasn't enough. But I think this Russian team overachieved for me to an extent. And I think that they put up a great fight in a great tournament that saw a lot of great play. You know, I think VAR, for everyone that wants to poo-poo it, I don't think it was that bad. And I think it was good to see them get the calls right for the most part. So I think that's something that we'll look back on. And I think as we look forward, in club football, we'll see the situation with VAR improve, and I think we'll be more appreciative of the job that was done in the 2018 World Cup. So let's Rob, let's wrap it up there, and I'm gonna just message our guest to make sure that he's ready to go. And as soon as he gives me the okay, I'd like to add him in here, and I'm very excited to have him on. It's the first time he'll be on the show, over the moon to have him on, especially at a time like this, because now we're going to switch gears and we're going to look forward from the World Cup. We're going to get into the transfer window now. So joining us now on Low Limit Football from Gianluca DiMarzio is Claudio Perforato. Claudio, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Great, great. Thanks for coming on the show. We're glad to have you on. And I want to jump in and start off with a general transfer window question. I look back, the Guardian has a great site where daily they update the list of every transaction that's happened in the transfer window so far this year. And right now, as we stand in the top five European leagues, there have been 844 deals completed for £2.74 billion, which is a staggering number. But for me, Claudio, the one thing that is intriguing is that the big spender at this moment is not the English Premier League. The English Premier League right now has spent £917 million, but they've been outdone by the Serie A so far at £930.6 million. I can't wrap my head around the fact that the Serie A has spent so much money in this transfer window so far, especially given that three teams in Italian football actually declared bankruptcy in the past couple weeks. So what do you accredit this huge amount of spending in Italy right now? What do you attribute it to?
Yeah, well, that's a great point. Now, the in Italy, the top teams are very, very more wealthy than the bottom teams are, and that's why, you know, you're having those issues in Serie B and lower, where teams are going bankrupt and they can't make their finances in order to stay in Serie B. But as far as the top of the Italian league, they're spending a lot of money, and the teams are in very healthy situations, really. If you look at Inter, they have very wealthy owners now, and they're figuring out their financial fair play issues, so they've been able to spend more this upcoming season, especially with the Champions League qualification. Napoli is in great, great financial shape thanks to their owner, so they could spend, even though they haven't really spent that much yet this transfer window, and I don't expect them to, but they could if they wanted to. Juventus, obviously, with a huge deal to bring Ronaldo to Serie A. So, and Roma, even, is in great financial shape. They've kind of sorted out their financial fair play issues. They have a stadium planned and coming on the way. So the future is bright for Serie A, especially they're about to get a new TV deal. They got it, actually. They got one in Italy and they got one abroad, which is an increase. And with the Ronaldo arrival, it's only going to get more and more positive for the league going forward.
Hi, Claudio. Good to have you on the show. Obviously, you know, the transfer of Cristiano Ronaldo definitely not just really brought shockwaves around the world, but certainly was a more of a point and really just to demonstrate that the league is really serious of trying to become the best in the world. Now, as you know, Serie A was among one of the best leagues in the world back in the 90s and back in the late 80s when they had all those wonderful players. And I was reading an article actually shared by Joe a couple of days ago saying that, you know, they have the opportunity with the transfer of Ronaldo to really demonstrate to themselves that they want to be the best league in the world, you know, better than the Premier League, better than La Liga, as many people are saying, just because of the great players that are coming in. And the one argument that I gave to Joe is that, you know, in order for them to be at least the best league in the world, I think they need one more superstar, maybe to the likes of a Messi or a Neymar or an Mbappe or any of those type of players. I think they just need one more superstar, because obviously, you know, we saw how great the race was last season with Juventus and Napoli, that this league does have the potential to yet again rise from, you know, back then when it wasn't exactly, you know, demonstrated of being such a strong league, but it's definitely been much more entertaining, at least in this type of in this decade, as I would say. But I just want your thoughts on that, and, you know, do you agree with me in saying that we just need maybe one more superstar in this league to really propel Serie A to the next level, or what do you think should be done in order to get to that level?
Yeah, well, I think it's a slow process, and for me, the big sign was last summer, actually, where a lot of the star players, like a Bonucci, they were staying in Italy. You know, instead of being sold abroad, they were staying in Italy. And that was huge for me. And that's continued to this year, where the Ronaldo arrival, the Ronaldo signing by Juventus, it was really a reaction to what all the other clubs were doing, if you think about it, because Inter was having a great market. They were signed Nainggolan. They signed Martinez, a great prospect from Argentina. They signed De Vrij and Asamoah. So they really strengthened. Roma was making crazy signings. You know, Pastore, they signed Kluivert, another great prospect. So they were bringing great people to their team. And then, you know, Napoli gave Juventus a run for their money last season, and then they went out and signed, you know, one of the most successful coaches in the world, you know, and definitely the most successful coach in Italy right now, in Carlo Ancelotti. So Juventus went and they kind of said, hey, this is still our league. And to me, it speaks volume that the other teams now are pushing Juventus to do these types of things, whereas Juventus is really on an island for the past few years. So I agree with you. I think, but what Ronaldo does is he keeps the star players that Italy, that the Italian league already has in Italy. You know, you could see it in Juventus already. Usually people are talking about, oh, is Alexandro going to leave Juventus? Is Dybala going to leave Juventus? Is this guy going to leave Juventus? But what's happening now with the arrival of Ronaldo is those players on Juventus, I'm sure, want to stay now, because Juventus has to be considered a contender for the Champions League, and it's going to be the same thing with other star players, where they're going to want to come to Serie A and play against him. And I don't know if the other teams really have the money to sign an Mbappe or a Neymar or the top tier yet, but, you know, with the few years of building and being in the Champions League consistently, for an Inter, for example, they could definitely get back there, because they are global brands that a lot of leagues don't have, which that's a positive for Serie A.
No, definitely. And like you said, you know, obviously it does take time. You know, we saw that with the Premier League when it was established. You know, we saw that with La Liga, you know, and their success that they had in European competitions, that I feel that, you know, assuming that the Italian clubs have success in the Champions League, in Europa, from these clubs like Juventus or Inter or Milan, Napoli, Roma, and so on, that it could really propel Serie A to have much more influence and definitely power among all the other leagues in the world, that it would be regarded as the best league in the world. But, you know, I think from what we were able to see last year and last season, I would say that it was a really good race towards the end. You know, assuming that, you know, all these teams are getting stronger, you know, with Inter, with Napoli, with Roma, obviously we need to look at what Milan is. Are we expected to see another tight race in the Serie A season? Or do you feel that, you know, with the acquisition of Ronaldo to Juventus, and the players such as Dybala and many others staying at the club, that, you know, this could lead to Juventus winning their 8th straight Scudetto?
They're definitely the favorites at this time. They're kind of closed the gap on them, in my opinion, a little bit before the Ronaldo signing. I think the Ronaldo signing just propels them to another level. I can't wait to see what he does in Italy, because it's the perfect league for him at this point, where it's a slower league. He's a very good goal scorer, and goal scorers typically do well for their late 30s in Italy. So I don't expect anybody to overcome them. Napoli with Ancelotti, you know, he brings a different mentality. He's a winner. He's won in many different leagues. He's won in Italy. But it depends on what they do in the market. As of right now, I don't think that any of the teams will be able to overcome Juventus, but we'll have to see what they do and what the other teams do for the rest of the transfer market. But the great thing about Serie A is you have a legit race now for the top 4 spots, where even that, you know, you had Juventus, Roma, and Napoli, really, they were the ones that were getting the top 3 spots when Italy only had the 3 Champions League spots for the past 2 years. But now you have Inter coming back. You have Roma and Napoli strengthening. Milan, you know, they've had a lot of issues, but at the end of the day, they remain a strong team, and I'm sure with the new owners now, they'll invest even more and try to get back to that top 4 level, at least as a building block.
No, absolutely. Now, obviously, we need to talk about the supposed transfer of a player that, you know, was destined to join a Serie A team, and which is Roma, but now Within the last few minutes, we've seen breaking news about how, you know, the player, obviously Malcolm from Bordeaux, is scheduled to join Barcelona because of a better deal that matched with Roma. Obviously, you know, this just broke in within the last few minutes. You know, we know the kind of clout that Monchi has at Roma, and we've seen that with the type of players that he was able to bring in. But, you know, obviously, with you being in the know of the transfer, in the transfer window, what is the latest on Malcolm, at least at this moment that we're talking? And, you know, is this deal actually going to happen to not just Roma, but, you know, is he actually going to go to Barcelona? So what's the latest, Claudio?
It's a very weird situation. As you know, as you've stated, I write for the Demarzio site, and a few hours ago, he wrote an article that I translated, which basically said that Malcolm was on his way. He was supposed to arrive in Rome tonight. The fans were actually at the airport waiting for him. He was supposed to get there around 11 p.m. local time. And Bordeaux canceled his flight, basically, and told him he's not authorized to go because Barcelona was showing interest in him. Now, Demarzio didn't report how much Barcelona offered for him, but I saw on other sites and stuff that it's around 41 million. The deal with Roma was for 32 million euros fixed with 4 million in bonuses that could be achieved later on. So it looks like Barcelona is offering a little bit more, but they didn't say anything about the player not wanting to go to Roma. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. Bordeaux wants Roma, I think, to match Barcelona's offer. But, you know, if Barcelona really want him, the pull, it's just too much of a pull, I think, for him to still go to Roma, because Barcelona has more finances than Roma does. And obviously, you know, you're talking about one of the top three clubs in the world. So it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It's a very, very strange situation because both clubs actually announced earlier in the day that the transfer was done and he was going to undergo his medical visits, and then it fell apart this evening.
Now, I just want to jump in here quick. What does this do for relations between, like, let's say either Bordeaux and Roma, or even Roma and Barcelona? Obviously, Monchi had to take a back seat sometimes when he was at Sevilla to Barcelona. Now, you'd think he was out of the league, but he's almost getting pulled back in by an old friend. I mean, what does this do for relations? And even moving forward in this deal, does Malcolm eventually, does this become a bidding war and Roma win the bidding war? Is this, you know, what happens from here?
It's going to be very tough for Roma to win the bidding war. I don't think they will win. If it's a situation where, you know, Bordeaux is saying, look, Barcelona offered us 41 million, match it and he's yours, or, you know, we're going to sell him to Barcelona, I think that's the only way Roma comes away ahead here. I think it's very unlikely that he actually ends up in Roma now. But as far as relations, it's terrible. I mean, how could you ever trust the club who went and announced the transfer on their own website and then only hours later told the player, wait, hold on, we just received an offer from another club? And it doesn't look good for Barcelona either, because the transfer was so public and it was pretty much official. And here they are in the last hour before the player actually signs the papers, coming out and saying, here's, you know, 7 million or it's 5 million, whatever is more for the player. You know, we really want him. They had plenty of time to jump in. This transfer has been going on, if you follow it, for a few days, maybe even more. About it's been like a week or two now. So they've had plenty of time. And I think the relationship between Bordeaux and Roma would be totally done if this falls apart. But I even think that it would make any deals between Roma and Barcelona very, very difficult in the future too, because I see it, both clubs wrong here for doing something like this.
Yeah, definitely, no doubt about it. It's just bad negotiating is what it comes down to, and it can sour relations, not only, you know, between, like you said, Bordeaux and Roma, but it can even go deeper into any of the deals Bordeaux, you know, does in the future. So it's something where they really need to tread lightly. I want to move on to some defenders here now, and really with a little focus on Juventus. Another piece that kind of gained a little steam here in the past couple hours is and was reported by Khaled El Nous, who does a lot of Juventus reporting. He said that Leo Bonucci is close on returning to Juventus. Now, my question to you, Claudio, is twofold. One, can you go home? Because obviously that's what would have to happen here is Bonucci would have to return to where he, you know, where he previously started. And what does this mean for Caldara and Rugani, who have both been rumored to go to Chelsea? More likely that Rugani would move, but do either of them move at this point, especially when you bring in if you bring Bonucci back?
Yeah, so as far as him going home, it's a very awkward situation. I think I don't know how the fans would react to him coming back. They obviously were not very happy with him leaving, and especially leaving to go to a rival like Milan instead of going abroad. And then there was a lot of talk of issues between him and Allegri last season before he left. And I don't know how that's all going to work out, because he clearly left because there was an issue between him and the club. So I don't know how he'll be received. As far as the transfer itself, I think it makes total sense for both sides. The latest things I've read about it, too, were that they're talking about a potential Bonucci for Higuain swap, which makes a lot of sense because Milan need a striker of Higuain's caliber, that they haven't had one probably since Ibrahimovic has been on the team. They need somebody like that who can make the difference. I think it's more important for them to have an attacking player like Higuain than to have a defender like Bonucci at this point. And Bonucci, you know, he's getting older. He wants to win. I'm sure he doesn't want to waste another season missing out on the Champions League. So I think the swap actually would make sense for both teams, but I'm not sure how he would be received. And then Rugani supposedly, yes, was close or is of a lot of interest to Chelsea, which I think out of the two, Rugani and Caldara, he's the most likely to leave. Caldara just got there. He's had a great spell at Atalanta over the past few seasons. He's really, really a bright spot for both Juventus and Italy's future going forward. Rugani, he really hasn't cemented his place in the Juventus lineup, even though he's had opportunities to do it. You know, Chiellini was a stalwart last year, but then Benatia kind of took that other central defending spot. And Rugani had the opportunity to do it, and you could just tell that Allegri was really reluctant to use him. He started using him a little bit more towards the end of the season in bigger matches, but he very rarely played in big matches. So I think if they can get $50 million for him, which is the rumored price, they should probably take that and invest it into maybe a Bonucci or another stronger, more famous or more well-known name at this point.
Sure, sure. Now, I want to move on to one more Juventino here, and we're talking huge numbers, and that's Miralem Pjanic, was rumored to possibly going to Manchester City for 100 million euro. You know, the 100 million euro mark, that level of money is usually reserved for the most elite of elite players, you know, the Neymars, the Kylian Mbappes, you know, even Cristiano Ronaldo's. It's reserved for that echelon. If this offer truly exists, wouldn't Juve be fools not to accept it and send Miralem Pjanic on his way, given the midfield that they have right now?
Of course. It's twofold, because for me, he's a very important part of the team. Last year, I would argue that he was actually the most important part of the team, because he really created a lot for them. He was the only real creative player in the midfield last year, and their midfield has been lacking since, you know, Pogba and Pirlo left. So I think he's a very important player for them. But like you said, is he a 100 million euro player? Probably not, especially when you consider what they paid for him, which was around 30 million. That's what his release clause was when they purchased him from Roma. So if they have that, and I read that Barcelona is one of the teams that's also interested in him, if they have that offer on the table, it's tough for them. It's going to be really, really tough for them to turn down, especially with the numbers that they have to pay for Ronaldo. So I think they could do it. I think they'll do it if the offer comes, especially because they're going to rely a lot on Bentancur this upcoming season. They obviously signed Emerson too on a free. So and they'll use that money and invest maybe in another younger midfield for less than half of that price. So it would be shocking if they received that kind of offer and choose to keep him.
Yeah, and you know, when you mention the name Rodrigo Bentancourt, and you think back to the World Cup that he had for Uruguay this tournament, really kind of took a step forward on the international stage for me, where the Juve brass could actually look at him and say, you know what, he's grown into that position and he's become a reliable piece, maybe making Miralem Pjanic a little more expendable, don't you think?
Absolutely, and the one interesting thing about Bentancourt for me is, like you said, he definitely made himself well-known on the world scene at the World Cup, but earlier in the season, you're someone that follows Juventus closely. Allegri really doesn't like to throw players, new players especially, into the fray. He likes to kind of ease them in and rely on his more experienced players, and then, you know, once he feels that they're ready, he throws them in there. But he was playing Bentancourt. I remember Bentancourt played in the first game against Barcelona in the Champions League group stage, and he had just arrived this season. So he's someone that I think Allegri trusted to begin with, and now he had a decent season. He did great at the World Cup, and he's only going to get stronger. So that's definitely in the back of their mind when they are considering offers for Pjanic, because they do have a lot of faith and trust in Bentancourt, and I think he is the future of the midfield.
No doubt about it. So I do want to close with one more question before we go. Looking at your Twitter timeline, you did a little pass-by at Coverciano in Florence recently. Tell us about your trip to Italy.
Yeah, so I was actually there for a wedding, but the wedding was in Florence. So I passed by Coverciano, which was tough because it was right before the World Cup. So, you know, they should have been there practicing and training for the World Cup, but unfortunately they weren't, and that's the way it goes. But I also was able to visit the Davide Astori Memorial at the stadium at the Franchi, which was very moving and powerful. So I had a good time there. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, the closest I got to Coverciano was there was a sign in Florence as we were driving by in the middle of the night from the Piazza Michelangelo that pointed in the direction of the Coverciano. I took a picture of the sign, but that was as close as I got.
It's beautiful. It's a shame that they didn't make it to the World Cup because they have all the amenities they need up there. I mean, it's beautiful. So they have all the conditions to train right and do what they have to do to qualify and win. But unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be this season.
No, not this time around. So, Claudio, thank you again for coming on the show and joining us tonight, especially with all the big transfer news that's happened over the past week. I know Rob and I have enjoyed it, and we look forward to having you back, man, real soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Claudio Perfetto from Gianluca DiMarzio joining us. And great to catch up with him. And really, like, the perfect time to have him join us, especially with all the transfer news that's breaking. It seems by the minute, Rob, I'm literally, while you were doing the interview and I was listening in one ear, I'm scouring Twitter to make sure that we're not missing a move, because these things seem to be going so fast and furious that you never know who's moving next. It could be Messi to Bayern. At this point, you just don't know. So you have to kind of.
At this point, it could be us. It could be us at this point.
Yeah, you know, we are available. We'll talk to our agents and let them know where we want to go. But
yeah, we'll accept all offers, but we do with, like, nice apartments or houses for that matters with big swimming pools.
That's right. So let me actually, you know what, you bring up a great thing, because we'd like to make a little announcement here, right, Rob?
Yes, sir.
So as many folks know, we were part of the All In Sports Talk Network for the beginning of this year, and All In is no longer going to be broadcasting shows. We had some great shows on there. MLS Aces, we were on there. Cultural Land was on there for a little while. All the guys at World Football Index were on there. So, I mean, just great programming, and to Steve Gennaro and Preston Weatherington, we want to thank them for the opportunity, but obviously they're closing up shop. That's why we're back on our old server for live broadcasting now. But as one door closes, another door opens for us. And we were reached out and agreed to earlier, just before we came on the show, to join the FNX network. So our good friend Stel Stiliano at Shoot the Defense, who's one of the directors over there now, and Ryan Oosterdorp, who owns it, you know, asked us to be a part of the network. So we're going to be we're not going to be broadcasting live from there. We'll still be broadcasting from our own website and our own server. But our shows will be cross-posted onto FNX Network, and we're very excited that they're going to have us on the format and on the platform. So that'll be our official announcement, and we'll make sure that we don't call the plane back and rework the deal with somebody else at the moment. So
yep. Although we didn't put pen to paper, but obviously there is the agreement by hand.
That's right. Of course, the gentleman's handshake and ours is apparently much more important than Bordeaux's. So let's.
Oh, they make good wine. They do make good wine.
They do make good wine, and still reason to go there. Let's talk about some stuff, Rob. Obviously, we talked about Rugani to Chelsea. You know, obviously Caldara's mixed in there as well. And the Leo Benucci part. You know, these are kind of the rumors that are floating around right now. None of these are confirmed as of yet. The one thing that Claudio broke here that was pretty interesting was the possibility of Gonzalo Higuain going back to AC Milan as kind of a swap with Benucci, which I think would make the money work, would also make sense for a Juve standpoint, because Higuain's become a little bit more expendable with the addition of Cristiano Ronaldo, who's really become more of an out-and-out striker at this point, not as much of a winger as he used to be. You also have the redundancy with Mario Mandzukic, who can play both slots still. So you have coverage there, and I think that, you know, it makes sense for Higuain to possibly move on, and with the Bonucci part of it coming back, I think that makes money sense, especially when you start to talk about Rugani going. Juve could end up on the plus side of this and Cristiano Ronaldo all in one shot, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is a good move for a player like Higuain. And obviously, you know, in his 30s, I was going to turn 31 in December, you know, and rightly so. I think it's time because, you know, you look at Juventus, you look at players up front and the amount of depth that they have in attack. I mean, you know, with players like Ronaldo, like Dybala, Mandzukic, you know, Douglas Costa, among others. I mean, yeah, I think, unfortunately, and yes, we all know that he's a great player. Oh, Bernardeschi as well, you know, we can't forget about him. You know, he's still part of the limelight at Juventus, but you kind of have to look at Higuain, who is getting on that old side. You know, obviously, I think would probably slot well into most big teams in the world, maybe with a few exceptions, but I think with a team like Milan, who are desperately needing a striker, I personally think this would be a great move for him, and you know, rightly so. I mean, yes, they will be playing in Europa, so it is a different environment to what Higuain has been accustomed to. But you kind of look at the age and really just more to the dependency that, you know, that basically they didn't have with him at Juventus. That, you know, I think this would be a great move for a player like Higuain. And as far as Benucci, I mean, yeah, it's interesting because you don't really see players coming back to the old club after one season. I think this would be a great move for him to really get that defense really straightened up. Obviously, it is going to need a little bit more work, obviously, with players like Barzagli not getting any older and Chiellini, who is still a great player, but also not getting older. You know, Benucci, I forgot his age real quick, Joe. Do you happen to know it?
I think I want to say he's just 30. I'd have to look it up.
31. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, he's still not exactly old, but certainly kind of, at least for me personally, it is a bit skeptical to go for someone like that. But I personally would want to keep Rugani on that team. But, you know, and you also have to look at the future of a player like Benatia as well. I mean, DeSiglio, you know, he's still on that team. He's only 25. He could definitely work in that fullback position that, you know, I would assume will be filled by a player like Joe Cancelo. So it's tough, but I think that defense really needs a bit more work. But I certainly don't think that bringing back a Benucci helps. He is a wonderful player, but if you look at more of an age factor, I still feel that they should go for someone else, which I think, you know, Juventus having the money to do so, assuming that they sell players like Pjanic, and with that money that they could definitely get a top defender around the world, which, you know, is so hard to get nowadays, but certainly they have the money and, of course, the clout to do so. But I think when it comes to that swap with him and Benucci, at least for Higuain's career, it's a good one.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, I'm just going to cover real quick. Obviously, there's a rumor that Alphonse Areola, the goalkeeper at PSG, is looking to possibly move to Roma to replace Alisson, given that Gigi Buffon has moved over to PSG, which would limit Areola's playing time. That one has just been rumors so far. We're yet to see what's going to happen there, especially now with the Malcolm situation. You've got to wonder if Monchi may drop Malcolm, try to pick up a different player in his place, and go much harder after Areola to replace Alisson moving forward. So we'll have to see. That one's going to be a little bit more fluid. And then speaking of fluid, we talked about Higuain as a striker, but there's really a lot of rumors of movement. Karim Benzema, Alvaro Morata, Giroud, Nikola Kalinic, all these strikers possibly in some type of massive rotation with players moving to different spots. Rob, what do you make of the striker shuffle?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a really skeptical one. I mean, we saw, I guess, what you also forgot to mention, Benzema. You know, that's a player that, you know, lashed out at DiMarzio, if you remember, Joe, a couple days ago, you know, because of the so-called talks that they had with Milan, and Benzema just, you know, absolutely, not destroyed him, but certainly called him out, saying that it was all fake news. But, yeah, this is interesting. But, you know, it's kind of hard to really try to convince these players, because, yes, Milan is a big club, and they are playing in Europa. It's going to be hard to convince these players. I think the one player that perhaps could be less convinced is probably Benzema, because I still feel that he wants to do something over there at Real Madrid. But, you know, with players like Mbappe or Neymar being rumored to go, even though I doubt both of those men will leave the club, it puts him in a really bad situation. Morata, I still feel, needs to prove one more thing, and I think when a manager like Mauricio Sarri can really get the best out of Morata to the club, I mean, it's tough. I mean, these are all good strikers, nevertheless. I mean, maybe with the exception of Giroud and Kalinic, but I think the other strikers are really good and really, really slot into that AC Milan team. But it's really tough to say, honestly. Like, they desperately need it, and they're looking at these options, and, you know, it's just they're grasping at straws, and it's hard to decide, really.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's look at the done deals real quick. Just a couple of, you know, small transactions since the last time we were on the air, Rob. Just some guy named Ronaldo to Juventus. Kylian Mbappe, I guess.
Well, what do you think about that, Joe? I mean, I think we talked about it last time with our guest, but it wasn't confirmed. But now with this deal done, how do you feel?
I'm happy. I'm very, very happy. The thing for me is Cristiano Ronaldo brings to the table. I mean, everyone wants to get him out. He's 33 years old. His goal scoring production is down. Yeah, I get all that stuff. But he brings one thing to the table that not many of the other moves could have brought, and that is the mentality of winning. And winning on the biggest stage when the spotlight is brightest on you. How many times have we seen him take over in the Champions League? How many times did he, you know, you saw his magnificent performance against Spain in the World Cup. You saw him, although he didn't play in the final, everything that led up to the Euros 2 years ago to lead to that final was all on the shoulders of Cristiano Ronaldo. And the thing that Ronaldo does is he makes many of the players around him much, much better. I think a guy like Karim Benzema is going to miss Cristiano Ronaldo next season at Real Madrid or wherever Benzema may end up at. And I think that is a huge, huge piece of what was missing at Juventus is the mentality of winning on the international level. And I think if you wanted anyone, if there was any one player in the entire world that you said, you know what, who knows how to win on the international level when the spotlight is as hot as it, and as bright as it can possibly get, you would look at Cristiano Ronaldo as option number one. You know, one guy that you would actually look at that would be a possibility in that conversation is Dani Alves. And if you remember, Juve went to the final in the semifinals on the heels of a Dani Alves masterclass. You know, so that's the thing that Ronaldo brings for me. And I think it's the piece. This move that Juve makes is not about winning the Scudetto. It's not about the fact that Roma strengthened. It's not about the fact that Inter got stronger. It is strictly on the fact that this team wants to win the Champions League this year. Thanks for playing. That's it. They've got their future pieces. They bring in Caldara. They bring in Mattia Perin. They've got future pieces coming in. But the moves for Cancelo, the move for Cristiano Ronaldo, these are all Champions League today, now moves. And I think when you look at the teams, you know, depending on what happens in the rest of this transfer window, when you look at the teams that are favored to win the Champions League this year, you have to put Juventus in the top two or three in that discussion based on the fact that they bring Ronaldo in to a very, very strong team.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So let's. So yeah. So the. So a small move that they made. They brought in that Ronaldo guy. Kylian Mbappe, another small deal, completes the move to PSG from Monaco, which was previously a loan, which is going to leave me...
A lot of money, isn't it? Just a little bit of money.
Was it $168 million, something like that?
Something like that. Let me double check. It's $145 million plus $35 million add-ons. So,
there you go.
Yeah, just a little bit of money.
Yeah, some cash. Alisson Becker to Liverpool from Roma. Obviously, the Loris Karius thing did not, forced an immediate change, and this is something I was talking about with Stelciliano. We're now at the point now with Liverpool, and I want to go and just check their other moves so far that they make. I know this is not the only move they've made that's worth talking about, but when you go back and check their other moves that they made, let me just I'm looking at my list. This
off the top of my head. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say this Alisson Becker one is enormous in terms of the effect it's going to have on this Liverpool side. This is one of the moves they really needed to make, and for some reason my page is not loading properly, Rob. So I know you might have the full listing of...
I do, and they're all four great players that really, definitely are going to be helped this Liverpool side, not just challenge again for the Champions League, but also challenge that Premier League and try to beat those tough teams. Obviously, let's go in order. The fee of the transfer of Naby Keita from Leipzig for £52 million, the transfer of Fabinho from Monaco, obviously the Alisson move, and then the Shaqiri move from Stoke City. That's so yeah, £165 million being spent on these four. I mean, let's be honest, they're all good players nevertheless.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got a taste of Naby Keita yesterday in the ICC matchup against Dortmund. So yeah, huge moves, and obviously Liverpool's another team, and I think when we get into our league previews, we're going to have to spend a little time on Liverpool because of all the changes they made. They're really looking at that EPL title. They're really looking at improving what they did in the Champions League last year, and they're making the moves to do that. Let's go and look at a couple more. Speaking of Manchester City, Riyad Mahrez makes the move from Leicester City over to Manchester City again. And now this is another team that's talking about, Miralem Pjanic. What's the focus here, Rob, with these moves? What's Pep Guardiola trying to do?
I mean, I'm pretty sure he's trying to straighten out and get rid of the deadweight that, Manchester City have had, with Yaya Toure gone. Obviously, I think Fernandinho, as great of a player he is not getting older as well, As great as David Silva has been so far, He's 32 years old. He's not getting older. He's such a great player that he is. I mean, I think Guardiola is just building for the future, really. I think that I'm trying to have to look at Mahrez's age. I believe he's 27, so he's not exactly that old either. But yeah, I think it's more so just building for the future, with players in the midfield like Mahrez, like Sterling, Gundogan. You talk about Kevin De Bruyne, you talk about Leroy Sané, Bernardo Silva. Yeah, they're just straightening the midfield and trying to get as much depth as they want. Yeah. And, it's going to help them that, I can't see another team really challenge, assuming that, I think the one team that probably will challenge would have to be the teams like Chelsea, Manchester United, Liverpool, even Arsenal to an extent, Spurs if they have a good team as well. But, yeah, I mean, City are just going stronger and stronger, and it's just adding all that depth that they need.
And you bring up another great team that I want to talk about real quick, and that is Chelsea. Obviously making the move for Jorginho, for Maurizio Sarri. And this will go into one of our topics here that we want to talk about as well, is Antonio Conte, where it's rumored that he's going to be suing Chelsea over his dismissal. With them bringing in Sarri and the timing of it, the opportunities that are presented to Antonio Conte to move on are limited now because most of their teams have filled in their clubs. It's a short transfer window, and many teams wanted to get that done. So you see things like Real Madrid with Lopetegui. You heard about the fiasco of that at the start of the World Cup. Now Sarri comes in, and Sarri was coming in when he was already out because Ancelotti was in at Napoli. So now Conte has... Basically, he's a man on an island. He's got nowhere to go. Personally, I think the United States Federation maybe want to just, send him a phone call. I think he's probably going to be too expensive, but hell, it's worth asking. How does this go? How does this go down? And what do you think of the moves of Jorginho and Sarri coming into Chelsea and to kind of reinvigorate that side?
Well, I think in terms of the Conte move, it's definitely something very, very skeptical. I mean, obviously, and even look at the statement that Chelsea put, not even a thank you was given, or at least a congrats to Antonio Conte in comparison to other managers who have been sacked previously. I mean, there's certainly something going behind the scenes. We don't know what's there. Obviously, that's yet to be known. But, you know, yeah, I mean, this kind of puts Antonio Conte in a tough spot because I would assume he's probably going to take a sabbatical for a couple of seasons and try to, you know, try to, I guess, relax and everything after managing Juventus, the Italian national team, and Chelsea within consecutive years. That, you know, I think he just needs a break. But it's going to be interesting to see how him suing the club is going to be handled. And in terms of Jorginho and Sarri coming to the team, I mean, wonderful. A wonderful move. I think Sarri brings in vision. And yes, the criticism has been given. And you and I, Joe, both know how great Sarri is as a coach. You know, the one thing that is obviously going to be very, very skeptical on Sarri is, you know, having to use all the same players. And I think now getting a player like Jorginho is going to really help in that midfield with players like Conte and Hazard, assuming they stays. But I think the big question now is that they kind of need to get more depth and really good depth as well that I think Chelsea has. And knowing Sarri and what he's been able to do, using some of the same players at the same time and not going out of rotation a lot, I think now is more than ever to get those good players on wonderful form. And if so, you know, create that depth that could really challenge them from a Premier League standpoint or even a Europa League standpoint.
Yeah, what remains to be seen is can Chelsea hold on to Thibaut Courtois and Eden Hazard to complement a guy like Jorginho who can really move that team forward? I think that's going to be a big key. And to think of Jorginho playing alongside N'Golo Kanté in that midfield, I mean, wow, that would be something else. I mean, you know, one of the best defensive midfielders out there, one of the best passing midfielders out there in Jorginho. That would be some pretty crazy stuff to see, and I think it would instantly turn around this Chelsea side, especially if you get them to complement guys like Eden Hazard, whatever striker they may have there at the time, but and a decent defense backed by one of the best goalkeepers in the world. So they're gonna bear watching, and I think, to be honest, Rob, you know, between you and me, I think City's going to have a big challenge next year in the EPL.
Definitely, and all these other teams are being strong, but like what Ariola is trying to do, he's just trying to make his team much stronger.
Absolutely. And like I said, Carlos Cordero, you might want to give Antonio Conte a call and see, you know, what's up. So let's talk about, let's move over to some World Cup fallout with head coaching. And let's look at Mexico with Juan Carlos Osorio. Reported by Ivis Galarsep that he's going to be leaving the Mexican national team. He's not going to renew his contract. And with the, you know, with a tinkerer like Osorio, there are many rumors as to where he could possibly be going. The two big ones on the hit list right now are the U.S. men's national team, and if Jose Pekerman leaves to possibly take the Argentina job, the Colombia job, which would be open, which I believe from all reports would be Osorio's first choice. There's also question of Ricardo Gareca, who might be leaving Peru. He might be up for the Colombian job after a great, great turnaround of that Peruvian team. So, Rob, you know, there's a little bit of a coaching carousel here that's going to happen on the fallout on the heels of the World Cup, don't you think?
And definitely a lot of dominoes that are going to be fell that are going to be falling, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, going back to Osorio, I mean, we kind of have to know this, Joe. I mean, obviously, we know what the Mexican team is like, and they're cutthroat criticism on managers that, you know, even as great as Osorio did with Mexico in the World Cup, okay, yes, they did make it out to the round of 16 as it was expected, but it did beat Germany, perhaps not as convincing as one would think looking back, but certainly a wonderful job, I think, with this team. But yeah, it's kind of the same thing that we've been seeing over and over again with different managers that, you know, one cycle and then you're done at Mexico, yes, assuming that you don't win a World Cup or reach a quarterfinals. That's something Mexico haven't done in a long, long time. I think this was the case for Osorio. I think in terms of Osorio, I think for him as a Colombian, I think it's a dream for him to manage the Colombian national team and really set forward into basically probably the end of the golden generation that we saw in Colombia with the players like James, Falcao, and so on, and Cuadrado, and so on and so forth. But then the new players coming in, like Quintero, like Yerry Mina, like Davinson Sanchez, I think he would be great to try to manage the two generations, the two worlds, I would say. And for him, unfortunately, as great as he is, and I guess the expertise that he has in the United States, managing clubs in MLS and obviously working in U.S. soccer as a whole, that it would suck at least for American fans in itself, to really miss out on a really good manager and kind of a tinker, as you said. That's a perfect word that I'd like to use. Like Osorio, I think he would be great for the United States national team, for him to be able to work with that youth and new generation of players like Pulisic and Tim Weah and so on, and Josh Sargent and others, that I think the United States has to do a lot more to try to convince this manager to go and join their national team.
Now, you know, given the names that are out here right now, you also want to throw Greg Berhalter's name in. Ivis Galarsep is reporting that Greg Berhalter of the Columbus Crew is considered to be a front runner for the U.S. men's national team position. Is he the right choice? Would you rather see Osorio? Would you rather see a guy like Miguel Herrera? Is Antonio Conte a super pipe dream? Or even a guy like Pekerman or Gareco, you know, who could be out of their spots. Would you want to see any of those guys?
I mean, I'd love to see anyone else besides Berhalter. Even Pierre Ramiz, that's one of the favorites as well. He's also a manager that the United States want. I mean, for me, I would love Osorio. I think he'd be the perfect one for this team. Just because of the things I've mentioned, I think he would be great to try to manage such a young generation of players. But, you know, realistically, I personally think it's going to be an American. I think it's going to be someone like Vermees or Berhalter. I mean, I would love to see maybe even a Tata Martino, who I think is supposedly rumored to go to Paraguay to manage their national team. Nothing has been confirmed as of yet, but even him with the job that he's been doing at Atlanta, the wonderful job he's been doing at Atlanta, I think he would be great. But, you know, anyone else? I mean, who's out there really?
Jesse Marsh.
There's not a lot.
Jesse
Marsh. Yeah, him too. But he's going to. Leipzig. He left as well. He went to Germany.
Yeah, he's over as an assistant at Leipzig. So, you know, which is kind of the mothership right now for the whole Red Bull project. So, we'll have to see who ends up there next. But I don't know. I think there's some good choices out there. I just hope that the people in charge do make one of those good choices, and we'll have to see what turns up. So. Let's hit our last topic that we wanted to talk about real quick, and I think it's an important one. It's a tricky one, and it's Mesut Ozil's retirement from the German national team, which he announced this week, based on basically his, you know, him receiving racism and disrespect after his photograph taken with Turkish President Recep Erdogan, who, you know, politically speaking, has been a little bit of a, you know, trying to read up on it, more of an authoritarian, you know, like a dictatorship. But when you look back on Ozil and his defense of the photo that he had taken with him prior to the World Cup, you also look back on guys like Gundogan and Emre Can, they all bear Turkish heritage. And I think some of what's been coming from this whole situation is the fact that there's a little bit of a racist vibe to that Turkish-German player coming out of the DFB. And I think Mesut Ozil has gotten to the point where he's had enough of it. Now, the name escapes me, but it's Yuli... Rob, help me with this one. I can't think of his last name.
Who are you talking about?
The person that criticized him from... I want to say it was from the DFB.
Husef. Husef.
Okay, Yuli, thank you. Yuli Husev, he said that, you know, that Mesut Ozil, he kind of shot back at him and said that, you know, Ozil hasn't made a good play since the 2014 World Cup. He's been terrible. But then statistically, you look back, he's got the most assists of any player on the German national team since he came onto the team in 2009. Yep. And he's been nothing but excellent for them. Obviously won a World Cup. The guy goes down in the annals of German football as something of a hero. Returning that 2014 World Cup to Germany. This has gone sour grapes real quick out in the open. I think if Mesut Ozil wanted to retire based on the racism and the criticism that he's been receiving for taking that photo, I think that's fine. I think it's his right. And I think at this point, you know, if it's his choice, you should applaud him for his what he did on the pitch for this team. And I think right now what you're seeing is the DFB and the people involved in the DFB are not taking the criticism very well. And it might be uncovering something of a problem within German football that maybe permeates through the whole organization. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a tough situation, and certainly a situation I've never seen in my lifetime, at least, of a player being criticized, at least, you know, just because of his heritage, yet he people always tend to forget that 4 years ago, exactly 4 years ago, Joe, you have to remember, exactly 4 years ago, he was labeled a hero. He's going to go down as one of the greatest players to ever play for the German national team. He won a World Cup. He was the number 11 of this team. He was one of the pillars of the success of winning a World Cup after 24 years. And just because of the failure that, yes, it's hard to always, you know, you get that a lot with a lot of teams, that they start to criticize the factors of a team not repeating to the success that they want to. You know, we saw that with teams like Spain when they failed to head to the next round of the World Cup. We saw that with Italy in 2010 when they failed to repeat the World Cup. I mean, yeah, it's certainly, Joe, I mean, you can even go back to the ridiculous discussion about how foreigners were ruining Serie A, and that really caused a problem in the Italian national team. It's ridiculous that the foreigners, or at least in this case, because, you know, Mesut Ozil is just like you and I, Joe. I mean, we're not German or Turkish whatsoever, but we are second-generation immigrants. We have dual nationality. We're parents. Our family is of immigrants. We were born and raised in the country, which here is the United States, just like Ozil was born and raised in Gelsenkirchen, Germany. For lack of a better word, he's German. He is German, and you know, the rightly criticized factor, the fact that, if I win, I'm German, but if I lose, I'm Turkish, is ridiculous that people have to say such a thing like that. Yeah. Personally, yes, the controversy with the president of Turkey is obviously a big one. Obviously, but what he said, or at least the explanation of doing that, was to respect, I guess, his background and not to forget his roots, which I understand, because we don't know what the situation was. Certainly, from what he was able to say in that post, that it was about him just talking about soccer. That's it. Nothing political. No type of propaganda that he was trying to put. Not unlike what the German media was trying to do. But certainly, it was of no intentional harm. The fact that, you know, the DFB, you know, who have accepted various players of various heritages. You know, you look at Boateng, you look at Rudiger, Gundogan, Ozil, obviously. You know, Klose, Podolski. Both of them are Polish, German. You know, you look at players like, who's that guy's name? Leroy Sané, of course. He didn't make the World Cup, but he's certainly of a mixed heritage. Khedira, can't forget him. Yeah. You know, there's so much diversity on this German team that they're going to have to start criticizing him. But the fact that they're going to criticize Ozil is just because of a photo that he's taking with the president of Turkey, it's ridiculous. I mean, now this is the big question. And Joe, we talked about this at whole, that we need to see if this is the first shot of various other players like Gundogan, like Rudiger or Boateng stepping up and not just supporting Ozil, but, you know, speaking out of situations that they've been able to go through. Maybe they are keeping quiet for now, but after Ozil was trying to, you know, speak out and really start to talk about things that are happening, that it will just cause a big ripple effect of other players just coming out and talking about this. Yes, this is actually happening. He's not lying. He's actually speaking the truth, because this has happened to me as well. I mean, we're just going to have to wait and see. But, Joe, I mean, what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, you've seen loads of support come out from other players, German players around, that they support Mesut Ozil, thanking Mesut Ozil for his contributions to German football. You know, I kind of looked at this situation, and I thought of it. I've got a couple of different thoughts on it. First, I want to look at it from the line of taking a picture with a dictator, okay? Because in the end, that's what he is a dictator. And I get it that he was going back to his Turkish roots, and I don't mind that. And in the end, it's just a photo with a person. There's no benefit. There's no allegiance. We could say the same thing about Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un taking pictures together. Now what?
Or Vlad Putin as well.
Do you see what I'm saying?
But the thing that he mentioned, the thing that he mentioned, or at least the important part, that he wasn't talking to Erdogan, the political leader. He was talking to him, the person, which I would assume is a different person than the leader, or at least the thing that he's trying to portray.
Yeah. He was talking to the Turk. He was not talking to the president. Right, no, and I get that. I understand that. My equivalent, and I don't know that it is entirely equivalent, because I think this person in history was much worse, is if I played for the U.S. men's national team, but you know how strongly I feel about my Italian roots and my Italian heritage, that I would go over in the 1940s and take a picture with Benito Mussolini. You know what I mean? That it's mm. it's something akin to that, not exactly. You know, because I think Mussolini in the end could be considered a much worse person.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a better comparison would be, yeah, Putin. Let's do Putin
okay.
at this point.
All right. So yeah, if I was a Russian, yeah, I mean, I can understand that. You know, but at the same time, you look at this from an Italian American standpoint, and you say to yourself, "Wow, I'm taking a picture with an Italian because I can relate to the Italian part of it, the person." Do you know what I mean? So
yes.
I get where Ozil's coming from there, and I get it. I know that the image looks bad, right? But, and I understand that, and I understand where there could be criticism, but you should not criticize him to the level of racism. You can't criticize Mesut Ozil for relating to his Turkish roots. That, to me, is incredibly wrong. It is, you know, it's xenophobic. And I think it's just a wrong image to portray. You know, Rob, and we're seeing it actually at the end of this World Cup, and I'm going to tell you where we see it. We see it with the French national team.
Mm-hmm.
How many
yep.
people
the controversy with Trevor Noah.
Exactly. You know, so we still see these things. It doesn't matter. I'll tell you where else we saw it, Rob. We saw it here in the United States.
Yep.
How many times do we see criticism of players like Jermaine Jones, of Fabian Johnson, because they came from Germany,
right.
that they weren't quote-unquote American? It's total BS. They are American.
And I'll even go back, because, yes, it is different decision. It is different situations, but at least in terms of criticism, is you kind of have to look at Jonathan Gonzalez for choosing for Mexico, even though he was born and raised in the United States.
Exactly. Great example of it as well. So. You know, I think right now with a guy like Mesut Ozil, he was born in Germany. He's German, right? That's it. There's no denying it. So for a guy like Fabian Johnson, who was born in Germany, but he's born on a U.S. airbase, he's born on U.S. soil. He's an American. He's not a German. So he grew up in Germany. Okay, I get that. But he's an American. And I think you can't deny, as an American, I can't deny the fact that Fabian Johnson may relate to German customs, German traditions, you know, German, anything German. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's part of his fiber, his fabric. It's
even for us. I mean, yes, we have our roots, but you know, we still identify with the American customs and American ideals and that kind of thing. But we certainly won't forget our roots of, you know, in this case, Italian or Paraguayan ancestry.
Exactly, and we shouldn't be criticized for relating to those roots. And I think that's part of what's going on here with Mesut Ozil, is the fact that he relates to those roots like Ilkay Gundogan did as well. And I think criticizing them for relating to those roots is a bad move on the, you know, of the German people of the DFB. But to once Mesut Ozil retires and he says what he says, just let him go. Be done with it. It's done. It's over. He's gone. To sit
right.
there and to go and bash him again in public, I think is an awful move. It creates a bad image of the DFB, and it makes them look much more xenophobic. And if they are, then I guess it's a good thing because it exposes them for who they are. But you can't really you just can't do it. Just let it go. Let it alone. Let the man sail off into the sunset. He has his accolades. Be done with it.
There's a big sentence, at least from an article I read today, from Ralph Augustin. He said, "The most technically gifted player of his generation feels that he can no longer represent the white and black colors due to racism." Let that horrific sentence sink in.
Right, exactly.
But even then, what does this mean for Germany? Yes, they are talented, but this is very early for Ozil to do such a thing.
Yeah, you know, but you think about it. He's, what, 29, you said, right?
Yeah.
So obviously he's going to be 33 at the next World Cup. Will he be there? Questionable. We know Germany's loaded with talent. I don't think this affects the team itself moving forward in terms of the vision. Do you know what I mean? I think they will be fine moving forward without Mesut Ozil. You've got to think this affected his play. You know, so I've got to think that there was some effect there. But I think, you know, moving forward for the German national team, I don't think this move really affects them in a way people may think.
Right.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think in the end, everything that matters is we shouldn't regard him just as the German or as the Turk, but we should just refer him as Mesut Ozil, the soccer player.
Exactly.
And exactly what he does on the field is the way that he should be judged. Anything outside, yes, is subjective, but mainly he's just doing his job and kicking a ball and doing it, yeah, and trying to score goals or passing or winning titles. But in the end, he's just Mesut Ozil.
Exactly. I agree 100%. Let's now I know we've got some matches to actually come up this week, but before we do that, I want to go back and look at the MLS real quick, because we've neglected the leagues for a few weeks, obviously with very good reason. So we'll give you the rundown right now in MLS. The standings currently on the Western Conference: FC Dallas is leading the way, 39 points. LAFC in second place on 35. Sporting KC on 33 points. The LA Galaxy tied with the Timbers for fourth place on 31 points. Real Salt Lake rounding out the top six playoff spots on 30 points. Just outside, Minnesota at 28. Houston Dynamo 27. Vancouver Whitecaps 26. Sounders on 20. Colorado Rapids on 17. And San Jose Earthquakes in last place with 12 points in the Western Conference. Eastern Conference looks like this. Atlanta United leading all teams in MLS with 44 points currently. NYCFC in second with 40 points. The Red Bull on 38 points. Columbus Crew on 33. The Montreal Impact on 28, tied with the Revolution. Just outside the playoff spots, Philadelphia Union on 24, Chicago Fire on 23, Orlando City on 22, Toronto FC, the defending champs, on 19 points, and DC United last place on 14 points in the Eastern Conference. Leading goal scorers, Joseph Martinez on 22 goals so far, Rob. He's on insane form right now. Bradley Wright Phillips on 13 goals. Jossie Zardes on 13 as well. Zlatan Ibrahimovic coming over late. He's got 12 goals already for the LA Galaxy. And rounding out the top five is a slew of players. Teal Bunbury, Hosens at San Jose, Manotas at Houston, Nikolic at the Chicago Fire, and Ignacio Piatti all on 10 goals. Rob, I'm going to give it to you to give us the matches of the week coming up in MLS.
Yes, absolutely. In the MLS, we have a few matches of the week, obviously. You know, as we get to the basically the midpoint of the season with a couple of weeks to go, we have LAFC taking on LA Galaxy in the El Tráfico, as we like to say it, Thursday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturday, we have New York Red Bulls taking on Columbus Crew at 7 p.m. And then to wrap it all up at 8:30, we have Sporting KC taking on FC Dallas.
All right. So let's close out with the trivia question here, if you wouldn't mind repeating the question.
Yeah, absolutely. So, during the World Cup year, Deschamps became the second manager and captain. Deschamps became the second person to win the World Cup as a captain and as a manager. Can you name the other person to do so?
And I'd like to buy a vowel. I'd like you to give me the country.
Germany.
Oh, thank you. I knew it. So, the answer to the question is not the Brazilian. It's actually Franz Beckenbauer.
Yes, sir. 1974 won it as a captain, and 1990 won it as a manager.
You know, and I saw the post last week, and I'm like, I've got to remember that because I know that's going to haunt me. And then I forgot, and all I needed was the country, and it was Beckenbauer. So that's a
good one. I'm sure you're going to get me back next week. So
I've got a good one already for next week, and you probably know the answer, but I've got it coming for you. So
okay.
With everything done on the docket, let's hit the closing music.
Sounds good.
All right, let's do it. And for episode 212 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Claudio Perforetto for joining us from Gianluca DiMarzio and helping us break down the transfer window so far. Next week, we'll have another great guest. We'll be back on Monday, and then the following week, we'll be off again. But remember to find us back on our old server, which is our new server, and joining the FNX network. So, for episode 212 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.